Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Now, listeners, if you're seeing smoke today, the county has issued an advisory due to smoke from fires in Mexico that the winds have driven across our region. If smoke is heavy in your area, the county advises using caution with outdoor activities due to poor air quality, or you may just want to stay indoors. The county has also extended an emergency declaration due to the hepatitis outbreak, but it won't be testing water in the San Diego River despite some concerns, and we'll tell you why on today's show. Enrollment for Affordable Care Act policies opens next week, but you might not be hearing this elsewhere due to cuts by the Trump administration in notification about options to sign up for Obamacare. On Green Scene, hear about a proposal to jack up entry fees for national parks, and how you can voice your views on whether or not those fee hikes should be approved. This Saturday is Prescription Drug Take-Back Day, and we'll have information for you on where you can drop off your unneeded prescription medications. East County Magazine has done it again, winning 4 awards for our reporting at the San Diego Press Club's 2017 Excellence in Journalism Awards. Hear about our winning entries on today's show. The NAACP has issued a travel advisory accusing American Airlines of discriminating against African-American passengers, and we'll have details. Local wineries are teaming up to hold a Wine Aid event to help winery workers devastated by wildfires in the Napa Valley and other wine-growing areas. Learn how you can help on today's show. Our newsmaker interview today is with Emma Higgins. She's with Grid Alternatives, and she'll tell you about local programs to get free solar energy installed for low and moderate income homeowners in San Diego, as well as job training available for local veterans on November 9th and opportunities for other people, including refugees in San Diego, seeking jobs in solar energy. The nonprofit is also seeking philanthropists to fund solar job training and installations in East County. On Destination East County, hear about some haunting Halloween happenings this weekend, as well as other events coming up in November across our region. From Public News Service, learn about racial disparities in children's well-being in California. And then on sports, Liz Alper has news about a new lacrosse team coming to town, the San Diego Seals. Plus, she'll have the latest losses by the Aztecs football team. The county has broken ground on a new park, library, and sheriff station in Borrego Springs. Learn more on today's show. Plus, we'll have news about a food drive to help shelter residents in El Cajon and how you can help just in time for Thanksgiving. And finally, this Halloween weekend, we'll share a ghost story about a spectral ship rumored to haunt the sands of the Anza Borrego Desert. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Valerie Watts with a health report. County supervisors voted Tuesday to again extend the public health emergency declaration over hepatitis A for 2 more weeks. As of October 18, 516 cases have been diagnosed, including 19 fatalities. An article in the San Diego Union-Tribune on October 12 revealed that no testing has been done for hepatitis A in the San Diego River or its tributaries, even though a flood of human feces was found in the river last winter, and hepatitis A is spread primarily through fecal contact. A memo from county health officials stated that 4 cases of hepatitis A, including 1 death, have been linked to the San Diego River Valley. The virus can remain active in water for weeks or even months, the memo to Councilmember Lori Zapf stated. Despite those facts, supervisors have opted against testing the water for hepatitis A, after seeking input from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. A letter from the CDC recommends against testing the San Diego River or any body of water for waterborne hepatitis A virus because there has not been a documented waterborne hepatitis A outbreak in over 30 years. The letter cited the futility of environmental sampling during a person-to-person outbreak such as San Diego's. John Ward, CDC Director of Viral Hepatitis, wrote, There is no evidence that either water or environmental sampling provides additional information for addressing person-to-person HIV transmission. Thus, he adds, investing in these activities would unnecessarily divert resources that are needed to contain the outbreak in proven and effective ways, such as vaccination, education, more public restrooms, and improved hygiene such as frequent hand washings. The county and community partners have given nearly 84,000 hepatitis A vaccinations, including 7,748 to the at-risk population, which includes homeless individuals, illicit drug users, people with chronic liver disease, law enforcement and emergency personnel, people who work with homeless or treatment programs, food handlers, and gay men. For information on getting a hepatitis A shot, you can call 211.
This is Gene Carpenter with an important announcement about your healthcare options. Open enrollment to get coverage under the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, for 2018 begins on November 1st and ends December 15th. Many Americans aren't getting this important information since the Trump administration has taken the following steps to sabotage getting word out and discouraging people from signing up. He has slashed the ACA's advertising budget by 90%, cut the open enrollment period from 12 weeks to 6 weeks, cut funding for nonprofits that help people sign up for ACA health insurance plans, ended subsidies to help middle-income Americans buy health insurance, and signed an executive order raising premiums for older, sicker Americans and making it easier for insurers to sell junk plans at low cost, but with skimpy coverage that may exclude such items as maternity care, services for the disabled, and mental illness treatment. California's Attorney General recently filed a lawsuit seeking to block the Trump administration from cutting subsidies. A new poll by the Kaiser Family Foundation, taken in early October, shows that 70% of Americans believe it's more important for the president to make the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, work than to make it fail, CNBC reports. The poll also found that 66% want Congress to work on fixing Obamacare instead of repealing it. So Trump's actions are contrary to what the majority of Americans, including many Trump voters, now say they want. California's exchange offers Affordable Care Act policies through 11 different insurance companies that you can choose from. For information on policies available in California under the Affordable Care Act or to sign up for a plan, you can visit CoveredCA.com.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The public has until November 23rd to weigh in on a proposal by the National Park Service to hike up entry fees to $70 a vehicle at 17 of the most popular national parks, most of them in the West. At Yosemite, here in California, that $70 would mean paying more than double the current fee of $30 for a weekly pass, and at some other parks, fees would be nearly triple. Fees for motorcycles would rise to $50, and people coming in on foot would pay $30. The parks affected are Grand Canyon in Arizona, Yosemite, Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Joshua Tree in California, Rocky Mountain National Park in Colorado, Acadia in Maine, Shenandoah in Virginia, Mount Rainier and Olympic in Washington, Yellowstone and Grand Tetons in Wyoming, as well as Arches, Bryce Canyon, Canyonlands, and Zion in Utah. According to Interior Department Secretary Ryan Zinke, the entrance fee increases will help renovate the park's infrastructure, which has suffered from years of neglect and underfunding. Deferred maintenance is estimated at $11.3 billion, and yet park attendance has been breaking records in this 100th anniversary year of the National Park Service. Zinke says, "We need to have a vision to look at the future of our parks and take action in order to assure that our grandkids will have the same, if not better, experience than we have today." National parks already raised fees recently, and more hikes could make these national treasures unaffordable and inaccessible to some visitors. Critics contend that costs of maintaining national parks should be shared among all taxpayers, not just seasonal visitors. They are urging Congress to take action to increase park funding. Ben Schreiber, senior political strategist at Friends of the Earth, issued this statement in response to the proposal to hike national park entry fees. Secretary Zinke's extreme price hike will make America's national parks unaffordable for millions of American families. The Trump administration is turning our national parks into an exclusive playground for the rich, he says. And the environmental leader adds, yet again, the Trump administration is prioritizing polluter profits over the American people. Secretary Zinke has given our public lands to oil companies, slashed budgets, and attacked the regulations that ensure taxpayers receive a fair price for their natural resources. While Republican leadership looks to slash taxes for billionaires, price hikes at our national park will hurt working Americans. Schreiber predicts that this could be the first of many new fees that will be pushed onto working Americans to fund those tax cuts, adding, we should help give breaks to families who want to go on vacation, not companies who want to drill. But the Republican-led Congress has made tax cuts a priority, aiming to slash taxes for the highest income earners while cutting many other programs, from food stamps to firefighting. So the odds of sparing national park visitors hefty fee hikes may be slim unless the public speaks out. The fees would only apply during the five busiest consecutive months, May through September at most parks, but that's the most popular season for family vacations when the kids are out of school. If the fee hikes are approved, budget-minded visitors could travel in the off-season and could also still seek out some national parks that don't charge fees yet. Or if you want to visit multiple national parks in a single year, you could buy an annual pass for federal lands at $80, one fee that won't be going up. A public comment period on the proposed fee hikes opened October 24th and closes November 23rd. You can submit comments online at the National Park Service website, nps.gov. You can also contact your congressional members to ask that Congress take action to provide more funding to national parks from sources other than jacking up fees on the public to visit our public places.
If you're looking to get rid of unwanted and expired prescription drugs, the San Diego County Sheriff's Department will collect and dispose of these medicines during the Drug Enforcement Administration's National Prescription Drug Take Back Day. This Saturday, October 28th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you can drop off your unneeded prescription drugs at locations around the county. In East County, those locations include sheriff's stations or substations in Alpine, Borrego Springs, Lemon Grove, and Rancho San Diego, as well as Walgreens parking lots in Lakeside and Santee, and the Albertsons parking lot in Ramona. Dropping off prescription drugs that are no longer needed can help prevent them from falling into the wrong hands, potentially endangering children or contributing to the opioid epidemic if drugs are stolen. The service is free and anonymous. No needles or other sharp objects will be accepted, however. If you can't participate in the National Prescription Drug Take Back Day this Saturday, you can also drop off unwanted prescriptions at any sheriff's station or substation during normal business hours. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
East County Magazine picked up four more awards for online and daily news reporting at the San Diego Press Club's Excellence in Journalism Awards, bringing our total to 105 journalism awards over the last 9 years. Our editor, Miriam Raftery, won first place in public service reporting for an article titled, Whitewash, County's Border Fire Report Ignores Serious Concerns Raised by Residents. Raftery and Paul Cruz shared a second place award for political reporting for a story with video titled, Hunter Faces Tough Questions at Raucous Town Hall in Ramona. Rachel Williams took third place for her report, A Revolution of Struggle Continues for Syrian Refugees in East County. Rebecca Jeffress Williamson, Jonathan Getz, and Raftery shared a third-place award for their story, Parkway Plaza Evacuated, Car Show Shut Down Amid Unrest After Police Shooting, covering the civil unrest after the shooting of Alfred Alongo in El Cajon. Congratulations to all of our winners.
The NAACP, the nation's oldest and largest social justice advocacy organization, has issued a travel advisory alleging racial discrimination by American Airlines. A press release issued by the NAACP states that after several months of monitoring what it calls a pattern of disturbing incidents reported by African American passengers, the NAACP has issued the national advisory alerting travelers, especially African Americans, to quote, exercise caution in that booking and boarding flights on American Airlines could subject them to disrespectful, discriminatory, or unsafe conditions. American Airlines Chief Executive Officer Doug Parker said in a memo to staff that the company was disappointed to hear about the NAACP warning, CNN reports. "We fly over borders, walls, and stereotypes to connect people from different races, religion, nationalities, economic backgrounds, and sexual orientations," Parker wrote in the memo, which the company released to reporters. "We do not and will not tolerate discrimination of any kind." Parker said the airline has reached out to the NAACP to set up a meeting with the airline's leadership, as NAACP's president has called for. The NAACP cites a series of recent incidents involving troublesome conduct that the civil rights group says collectively suggests a corporate culture of racial insensitivity and possible racial bias on the part of American Airlines. Here are four examples, according to the NAACP. An African-American man was required to relinquish his purchased seats aboard a flight from Washington, D.C. to Raleigh-Durham merely because he responded to the disrespectful and discriminatory comments directed toward him by two unruly white passengers. In another case, despite having previously booked first-class tickets for herself and a traveling companion, an African-American woman's seating assignment was switched to the coach section at the ticket counter while her white companion remained assigned to a first-class seat. Third, on a flight bound for New York from Miami, the pilot directed that an African-American woman be removed from the flight when she complained to the gate agent about having her seating assignment changed without her consent. In the fourth incident, an African-American woman and her infant child were removed from a flight from Atlanta to New York City when the woman, who is a Harvard Law School student, asked that her stroller be retrieved before she would disembark. The NAACP denounced the actions, which it learned of only because of passengers who knew their rights, knew to speak up, and exercised the courage to do so promptly. Historically, the NAACP has issued travel advisories when conditions on the ground pose a substantial risk of harm to Black Americans. The organization's press release voices concern that the cases cited here could only be the tip of the iceberg of mistreating African-American customers. Derek Johnson, president of the NAACP, says that all travelers must be guaranteed the right to travel without fear, adding, "The growing list of incidents suggesting racial bias reflects an unacceptable corporate culture and involves behavior that cannot be dismissed as normal or random." He concludes, "We expect an audience with the leadership of American Airlines to air these grievances and to spur corrective action. Until these and other concerns are addressed, this national travel advisory will stand." Reporting for KNSJ, this is Meridian Broaddus.
San Diego County winemakers are pulling together to host a fundraiser to help winery workers who have been displaced by devastating fires in Northern California's wine country, as well as animals harmed by the fire. With recovery efforts underway in Sonoma, Napa, and Santa Rosa counties, the impacts of the firestorms are now being seen, and the number of displaced people is staggering. So, the Bernardo Winery in Rancho Bernardo will hold a wine and food tasting event on November 12th from 1 to 4 p.m., partnering with other San Diego County wineries and restaurants to support winery and vineyard workers and their families who have lost their homes or been displaced in these devastating fires to reestablish their households. 100% of the online ticket sales for Wine Aid 2017 will go to those families through a relief fund that has been established by the Sonoma County Grape Growers Association. At-the-door ticket sales will support the Sonoma County SPCA, which is offering no-cost veterinary treatment for burned animals and boarding for lost animals. Ross Rizzo, president and winemaker at Bernardo Winery, says, "People forget how much work it takes to make wine. Early mornings, scorching heat, and long days to get wine to table. We appreciate the workers and would like to help them up north, wine country to wine country." Many wineries from across San Diego, including East County, will be participating in the November 12th Wine Aid event at the Bernardo Winery, which has been producing wine since 1889 and is the oldest continually producing winery in Southern California, keeping its doors open through its own tough times by making sacramental wine for churches and grape juice during the Prohibition era. More recently, many vintners here in San Diego County recall the 2003 and 2007 firestorms when some local vintners lost their harvests or even their homes. Now these local winemakers are giving back, helping winemakers in Northern California in their time of need. The Wine Aid event will include wine and food tasting, live acoustic music, and a silent auction. For information on where to buy tickets, you can visit eastcountymagazine.org and click our food and wine section, or check the hashtag WineAid2017 on Twitter for more information. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Valerie Watts.
This is Liz Alpert with the Aztecs Football Report. After a significant loss to Boise State last week, San Diego State football fell on even harder times this week, losing 27-3 to the Fresno State Bulldogs in Mountain West play on Saturday. Fresno State was on the board immediately in the first quarter with sophomore running back Josh Hokett's one-yard run, and it was 7-0 Bulldogs. The second quarter saw the only Aztec points of the game, a 37-yard field goal by junior kicker John Barron II to make it a 4-point game. But Fresno State kicker senior Jimmy Camacho countered with a field goal of his own, good for 38 yards. Just before that, Hokett rushed for 26 yards for the score, and the Bulldogs went to the locker room up 17-3. Camacho added another field goal in the third, and Hokett added another short 4-yard rushing touchdown, and the combined team of Hokett and Camacho allowed the Bulldogs to seal the demise of the Aztecs in three quarters with a 27-3 victory. The Aztecs are now 6-2 overall and 2-2 in Mountain West play. They'll next travel to Hawaii. Kickoff on Saturday is slated for 8:15 p.m. and the game will be televised on ESPN2.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Emma Higgins. Emma is the Development and Communications Officer for Grid Alternatives in San Diego. They are an amazing organization that's actually offering solar energy free to households in our region. And they're also providing job training for some of those most in need of jobs in San Diego County. Emma, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about Grid Alternatives, exactly what it is and how it got started.
Okay, well, Grid Alternatives is the nation's largest nonprofit solar installer. We obviously have an office in San Diego, but we also have 9 other offices across the country, many located across California and then also in Colorado and Washington, D.C. We provide free solar systems to homeowners living on low to moderate incomes. These systems are designed to offset around 75% or more of their energy bills every month.
Wow.
And these installations serve a double purpose. So they're also classrooms where job trainees and volunteers can learn how to install solar systems from start to finish.
Very good. The solar energy industry, of course, has been very fast growing.
The solar industry has grown a lot over the last 5 years. There's around 240,000 people working in the solar industry across the country right now.
So that's huge. Where do you get your funding from?
We get our funding from a variety of sources. We administer SASH, which is a large federal program. We also get money from the City of San Diego CDBG program. And obviously, individual and corporate donors also help us hugely.
I understand that you're looking for more funding in East County, where we have a lot of folks in need of jobs.
Yes, we're always looking for funding. The nonprofit hustle is very real. We currently don't do a ton of work in East County. We have installed here in the past, and we do have a pipeline of people who need solar installed, but we can't quite cover the costs of those. So if there's any kind philanthropists out there that would like to get involved, then...
That would be great. But you're very active in San Diego, especially, I understand, some of the inner city neighborhoods like Southeast San Diego and City Heights.
We're very active in Southeast San Diego. That's really where most of our clients are. Since we began in 2008, we have installed over 880 systems for people in the city of San Diego, offsetting around $24 million in energy bills for them over the lifetimes of those systems.
That's really important, especially with the affordable housing crisis that we're facing. Getting those utility bills to be affordable is super important. Now, you also do job training, and this is exciting. I understand that you've been hiring veterans and refugees, including the newest refugees from Syria who are in our country right here in San Diego, some of them in El Cajon. Tell us how you're outreaching to these communities.
So we partnered with another nonprofit called Get Charged Up earlier this year. They are run by refugees, or that nonprofit is run by refugees, and they help young refugees to resettle in the country when they arrive here. Many of the refugees that we work with have been in the country for around a year already. Mm-hmm. So they are well equipped to come onto the worksite with us and start to learn solar energy.
How well do these jobs pay? Once they finish your training program and they get out in the world and get a real job, how much can they earn?
For a solar installer, the average pay is just over $19 an hour in California.
That's pretty good. That's a lot more than minimum wage. I understand that most places, training programs in solar can be as much as $5,000, maybe even more. How much does your program cost?
Our program is free, and if you qualify, then we also will pay you $13 an hour to train with us.
Very good. So who qualifies?
To qualify, you have to live within the city of San Diego. You have to either be a military veteran or a youth aged under 26 years old, and you have to be living on low to moderate income.
Okay. Very good. And again, I understand that you're looking for sources. If anybody out there is listening, if you're a philanthropist or you have a foundation, Grid Alternatives San Diego is looking for some funding sources to be able to do job training for folks that live out here in East County as well. So hopefully we'll see that coming soon.
Yes.
What is the future looking like for solar energy?
I think as solar becomes more affordable, people are investing in it more readily, including companies. Renewable energy is, in my opinion, the future. And so as it becomes more accessible, we're going to see more and more people choosing to take the plunge and go solar.
Very good. Is there anything on the horizon that could impact from a policy standpoint or cost standpoint the availability of solar?
There is an upcoming trade case that, if it goes through, it would increase the cost of panels. It would actually almost double the cost of panels, which would be really bad for the entire solar industry. So we're obviously very hopeful that that doesn't happen.
Now, I understand that you have sought funding from the county, and then for whatever reason, the supervisors turned it down. Is that correct?
I think we were optioned. So, you know, the way those grants work is they have a certain amount of money, and then depending on what other things are requested and the needs that those other projects have, we just slipped just under the line of being funded.
So hopefully maybe next year you can get some county funding, and if listeners out there want the county to provide funding to help provide jobs as well as free solar for people who live in the unincorporated areas, that's something that you can ask your supervisors about, right?
Absolutely, yes. I will be submitting a grant to them at the end of this month.
If people want to get more information about Grid Alternatives San Diego, where can they go?
They can go to our website, gridalternatives.org. If you want to find out if you qualify for solar with us, then go to grid, GRID, solar.org. Or you can email us at infosd@gridalternatives.org.
Very good. Emma, is there anything else that you would like our listeners to know about Grid Alternatives San Diego or the solar field in general that we haven't specifically asked you about?
We've definitely struggled to attract military veterans to our training program, but we know that there's a huge need out there. So if you are, or if you know of any military veterans who would like to come and install solar with us, we are actually having a special solar installation on November 9th in honor of Veterans Day. If you'd like to come and volunteer and just get a taste of what the solar industry is like, we'd love to have you.
If you want to find more information about that event coming up November 9th in San Diego, you can go to gridalternatives.org. And you can also check the website if you're interested in training in these solar jobs or getting solar energy for your house at no cost. Are you also installing solar for any of the tribal reservations out here?
We actually work very closely with a lot of Native American tribes in San Diego County, including La Jolla, San Pasqual. We've actually done a number of ground mounts for them this year, and we will continue to work with them over the coming years.
Very interesting. Have you reached out to any of the cities in East County, such as La Mesa, Lemon Grove, El Cajon, or Santee?
We have. We continue to do outreach to these cities and officials. We are hopeful that we'll be able to be doing some solar installations in El Cajon next year. Fingers crossed.
Very good. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we've been speaking with Emma Higgins. She is with Grid Alternatives San Diego. And if you want to find out more about how you might qualify for free solar for your home or free job training in the fast-growing solar energy field, you can visit gridalternatives/sandiego.org. Emma, thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you very much for having me.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea. Public interest news for our region.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This is Jonathan Getz.
And this is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting Destination East County. We'll have a preview of coming attractions, including a Haunted Elks Lodge, a Halloween Harvest Festival, the Hills Halloween Party, a spooky campover, the Boulevard Boo Parade, a Hollow Scream Night, a High Desert Mountain Yoga Retreat, an Autumn Fest and Plant Sale, the Ramona Art and Wine Festival, a live hawk demonstration, a Veterans Day ceremony, and the 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more. The Pumpkin Patch at Summers Past Farms in Flynn Springs invites you to enjoy the Pumpkin Patch weekends, complete with a corn maze, jumpy for kids, popcorn, and more. On Saturday, October 28th, the Alpine Stagecoach Lions Club will host a dog show, complete with costume contest from 1 to 4 p.m. For a full schedule of activities, you can visit summerspastfarms.com.
Scotty's Scare Trail, located at the Marshall Scotty's Abandoned Amusement Park in Flynn Springs, just east of El Cajon, is rumored to be haunted by old employees and children who never left, plus monsters roaming the premises. Open Fridays and Saturdays in October from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m., the Scare Trail aims to create haunting memories for you, whether or not you've ever visited this once-enchanted destination as a child. For more chilling details, you can visit scaretrail.com.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum Association is hosting its 12th annual Pumpkin Express Halloween celebration. You're invited to ride decorated vintage rail cars through the San Diego County mountains as fall descends upon the Campo community. Trains depart from the Campo Depot three times daily each Saturday and Sunday in October. Keep your eyes open for the Grim Reaper, who may be stowed away on board. After the train ride, children and their parents will enjoy decorating pumpkins from an indoor pumpkin patch. You can also walk through one of the two haunted trains with a creepy cast of goblins and ghouls, and take home a pumpkin for each train rider. For reservations and details, visit the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum at psrm.org. The El Cajon Elks Lodge 1812 is teaming up with the local haunted house production company Scare Ventures to present a haunted lodge for the community in their parking lot from October 26th through the 31st. The haunted lodge will feature a maze and four different key scare areas for guests to experience, plus activities and booths. There will also be early evening hours set aside for children under 12 to experience a less scary version of the Haunted Lodge that is family-friendly, where youngsters will be treated to Halloween candy from nicer monsters as they tour the lodge maze. The Elks, who have been serving the community for 60 years, will donate 100% of the proceeds from the event for children's charities. For details and tickets, visit elcajonelks.com.
The Mount Helix Park Foundation and Grossmont Mount Helix Improvement Association are joining together for a fun-filled Halloween Harvest Family Festival at the top of Mount Helix Park for neighborhood families on Sunday, October 29th from 2 to 5 p.m. A costume parade for kids, live music by Lenny and the Lounge Lizards, plus booths from local businesses offering crafts, games, and treats will all be part of this fall festival. Park at the San Miguel Fire Station on Rivera, and you can take a free shuttle to the top of Mount Helix. For more information on the event, visit mounthelixpark.org. That's mthelixpark.org.
What's Halloween without a scary good costume contest? You're invited to put on those devil horns or vampire fangs and make your way to La Mesa's The Hills local pub on Saturday, October 28th for a Halloween house party and an opportunity to win $10,000 for best costume. The second annual costume contest starts at 8 p.m. with the best dressed chosen by the crowd vote, so you may want to bring your friends. The grand prize will be given out at midnight, but the party will continue all night long, with special drinks such as Smoky Witch's Brew and Jungle Juice, plus DJs spinning your favorite hit songs. For details, you can visit thehillspub.com.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine will host its annual Spooky Campover from 3 p.m. Friday, October 27th until noon on October 28th. Bring your own pumpkin to carve, food, camping gear, and best costume. This event promises a wild and ghoulish night under the stars with the rescued animals. There will be a pumpkin carving, s'mores, campfire songs, costume contest, and animal feedings. For ticket prices and reservations, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. All proceeds benefit this nonprofit facility's work to rescue exotic animals and provide a permanent home for them.
Celebrating its 13th year, the Boulevard Boo Parade will be held on Saturday, October 28th, starting at 10 a.m. With over 70 entries of live entertainment marching on 1 mile of El Cajon Boulevard in the college area, the parade will entertain you with spooky ghouls, goblins, ghosts, and witches to fill you with the Halloween spirit. Grandstand seating is available for purchase, or arrive early to stake out space along the parade route on El Cajon Boulevard between Rolando Boulevard and 60th Street.
Saps at Sea, the official Laurel and Hardy fan club in San Diego, will host its October event, Howlarious Hallow Scream, on October 28th at 7 p.m., with the doors opening at 6 p.m. at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Spring Valley. This month, the Saps are teaming up with the Theater Organ Society of San Diego to bring you spooky silent movies and a Felix the Cat cartoon, plus a special screening of the classic silent horror film, The Cat and the Canary.
You're invited to soak and stretch your way to relaxation and nirvana at the second High Mountain Desert Yoga Retreat, tucked among boulders high in the Incopa and Hakumba Mountains, near the eastern San Diego County line. This 4-day healing event from October 31st to November 3rd will include natural sulfur hot spring pools, healing sessions at the Desert View Tower including Kundalini Tantra Yoga, Reiki healing, and crystal sound healing. Guests will also savor vegan meals, scenic hikes, and some desert surprises, plus a 3-day stay at the nearby Hakumba Hot Springs Resort. For more details or to register, visit desertviewtower.com.
The Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College will hold its Autumn Fest and Plant Sale on November 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The campus is located in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. This event features live entertainment, craft vendors, plant sales, kids' activities, gardening workshops, an Ask the Designer landscape consultation, advice from water agencies, and a beer garden. For more information, you can visit thegarden.org.
The 5th annual Ramona Art and Wine Festival will be held at Beegent Ranch in Ramona Saturday, November 4th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Guests can view and purchase fine art in a variety of mediums, taste handcrafted wines, appetizers, lunch entrees, and desserts while picnicking in style beneath the shade of a giant oak tree. Vendors will also be on hand offering art and wine-themed items. A highlight of the event will be a live auction of 6 wine barrels painted by local artists. For tickets and details, you can visit RamonaArtAndWineFest.net.
You're invited to join Falconer Bob Gordon with his hawk Huxley for a live hawk demonstration and Birds of Prey talk. Find them at Mission Trails Regional Park inside the Visitor Center on the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to noon. The next demonstration is set for November 5th. For details, you can visit mtrp.org.
The City of El Cajon and the El Cajon Veterans Commission will host a special ceremony honoring our veterans on Veterans Day, November 11th. The ceremony will take place from 1 to 2 p.m. at Centennial Plaza on Civic Center Way in downtown El Cajon, and the community is invited.
The 71st Annual Mother Goose Parade will be held on November 19th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, starting at 1 p.m. This year's parade theme is Family Traditions. You can see over 100 colorful and exciting parade entries, including floats, marching bands, clowns, equestrians, TV celebrities, and Santa Claus. The parade grand marshal is Randy Jones, former San Diego Padre pitcher and Cy Young Award winner. The parade route runs along downtown's Main Street, from El Cajon Boulevard eastbound to First Street. This popular parade is one of the largest in Southern California and a wonderful way to officially kick off your holiday season. You can learn more at mothergooseparade.org.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you'd like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
California has improved child well-being significantly since 2014, but still needs to shrink the severe racial disparities that persist, according to a new report. The Race for Results report from the Anna E. Casey Foundation comes out every 3 years, and the latest, the second in the series, shows the changing demographics. Fully 75% of California's kids are people of color, and half have at least one immigrant parent or are immigrants themselves. Laura Speer with Anna E. Casey says the decision to end the DACA program is clouding the future for hundreds of thousands of young people in the Golden State.
Ensuring that the Dreamers are able to stay with their families and in their communities and to continue to be able to contribute to our country. We need them in terms of the long-term success of our country, and we should allow them to be able to stay.
The report also found that President Trump's immigration raids are creating toxic stress for immigrant children who fear losing a parent or being deported themselves. Mike O'Day with the nonprofit Children Now says in 2016, California lessened the burden on immigrant families by expanding Medi-Cal to cover undocumented children, leading more than 200,000 kids to sign up. And the overall rate of uninsured children fell by 70% since 2014, thanks to the Affordable Care Act. However, he warns that Trump's efforts to undermine the program could reverse that progress.
There's the direct threat of taking away health care and destabilizing the markets, restructuring Medicaid, and those would have really dire consequences, particularly because 3 out of 5 kids in California rely on Medi-Cal and the Affordable Care Act marketplaces for their coverage.
Josefina Ramirez-Natsina, also with Children Now, says the state raised the minimum wage last year, which is a boon to low-income families, but then had to restructure child care subsidies so families wouldn't lose out.
Some families were getting bumped out of their child care because they were making more money. The state has increased the state medium income eligibility, so there's going to be more families that are going to be eligible to receive child care subsidies.
The state also recently expanded the unpaid parental leave policy to include people who work for businesses with fewer than 50 employees. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is Liz Albert with a sports report. As San Diego continues to pour cement over the gaping hole the Chargers left in San Diego sports, a lacrosse team enters the fray. The San Diego Seals are set for their inaugural season next year. The Seals, who were formally dubbed and given the logo Tuesday at a press conference at La Jolla Cove Hotel and Suites by team officials, will begin play in the National Lacrosse League in November 2018 at the Valley View Casino Center. "We wanted a name that was inherent to San Diego," Steve Govett, team president, said. "The seal's name acknowledges the marine mammals that live along our coastline, and it pays tribute to the brave men and women who help keep us safe and protect our freedom." The expansion team is owned by billionaire and Alibaba Group vice chairman Joseph Tsai, who said earlier this year, "I have a strong passion for lacrosse and look forward to bringing the NLL to San Diego. Our team is committed to creating a fan-first experience and to being an integral part of the local community." This is Liz Alpert with an Aztecs football report. After a significant loss to Boise State last week, San Diego State football fell on even harder times this week, losing 27-3 to the Fresno State Bulldogs in Mountain West play on Saturday. Fresno State was on the board immediately in the first quarter with sophomore running back Josh Hokic's one-yard run, and it was 7-0 Bulldogs. The second quarter saw the only Aztec points of the game, a 37-yard field goal by junior kicker John Barron II to make it a 4-point game. But Fresno State kicker senior Jimmy Camacho countered with a field goal of his own, good for 38 yards. Just before that, Hokic rushed for 26 yards for the score, and the Bulldogs went to the locker room up 17-3. Camacho added another field goal in the third, and Hokic added another short 4-yard rushing touchdown, and the combined team of Hokic and Camacho allowed the Bulldogs to seal the demise of the Aztecs in three quarters with a 27-3 victory. The Aztecs are now 6-2 overall and 2-2 in Mountain West play. They'll next travel to Hawaii. Kickoff on Saturday is slated for 8:15 p.m., and the game will be televised on ESPN2.
The county held a groundbreaking last week on a public park, a new library, and a sheriff's station in Borrego Springs. The new library will be 3 times the size of the old one that it will replace, and will also include a homework center, children's area, community room, and more. It will be equipped with energy-efficient features for zero net energy use, and also provides plenty of air-conditioned space for residents to escape extreme heat. The community's first public park will include play equipment, walking trails, volleyball courts, and other amenities for both children and adults. The sheriff's station will replace older law enforcement facilities. The 3 projects will be located on a 16-acre parcel of land in Borrego Springs that was donated to the County of San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Pistier.
Waste Management of San Diego and the Mother Goose Parade Association have launched a non-perishable food drive benefiting the East County Transitional Living Center, a faith-based facility which provides housing to help the homeless and others in need. The holiday season food drive will run through November 15th, with local businesses serving as drop-off sites, and will culminate with food collected by Waste Management at the Mother Goose Parade on November 19th. Daryl Priest, president of the Mother Goose Parade Association, says, "We are thankful to be counting on Waste Management as a chapter sponsor of this year's Mother Goose Parade and thrilled to be joining them to address a very important need in our community." Christine Costa, Municipal Affairs Representative for Waste Management of San Diego State, "As a business partner in East County, we are grateful for the many local businesses and organizations who have joined our efforts so that we may address hunger in our local communities. What better way to welcome the holiday season than to come together as one to help families in need?" Community members wanting to donate food items may do so by dropping them off at Waste Management's El Cajon office at 1001 West Bradley Avenue from Monday through Friday between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. or any of these drop-off sites: El Cajon City Hall, the East County Chamber of Commerce, Santee Chamber of Commerce, First Citizens Bank on Main Street in El Cajon, or the East County Family YMCA in Santee. You can also bring your non-perishable food items to the Mother Goose Parade, which will be held in downtown El Cajon on November 19th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Meridian Broadus.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
In the 1800s, many stories began circulating about a ship lying half buried in the sands of the Anza Borrego Desert. And some say its spectral sails unfurl at times on a ghostly voyage, its phantom crew seeking their way back home. After the Civil War, many migrants who passed through the desert on their way to California reported seeing a Spanish galleon with multiple masts and swore this was no mirage. Most claimed that it was loaded with a fortune's worth of exquisite pearls. Many expeditions sought to retrieve these riches, but so far none have succeeded. As the story goes, in 1610, King Philip III of Spain ordered Alvarez de Cordone to search off Mexico's coast and bring back pearls. Cordone hired two other captains, Juan de Iturbe and Pedro de Rosales. He also hired 60 pearl divers and had three ships built. In 1612, they set sail to plunder Mexico's west coast of its precious oysters. The ship paused repeatedly in its travels so that pearl divers could jump off and return with oysters they discovered on the ocean floor. Later, they found a village where Native Americans had baskets of pearls just lying about. The Spaniards arranged a trade of their fancy European clothing for the pearls, but instead swindled the Native Americans by giving them only rags and dirty cloths. Outraged, the Indians attacked the ship as it was trying to set sail. Cordone was hit by an arrow, and his ship was forced to turn around. But he ordered the other two ships on in the search of more pearls, commanding them to look north in the Gulf of California. As they journeyed up the Gulf, Rosales' ship struck a reef in a terrible storm. Before it sank, the crew transferred the valuable cargo to Iturbe's vessel, which sailed up the Gulf and eventually up the Colorado River and into the Salton Sea, or Lake Cahuilla, as it may have been called long ago. Some stories claim that the ship sailed into the Salton Sea to find the legendary Straits of Anian, an all-water route from the Gulf of California to the Gulf of Mexico. It's been said that the Salton Sea and the Colorado River ran high, filled with water during a flood that swept the ship into the vast inland sea. Some say that an earthquake happened, closing off escape. The captain was horrified to find the outlet to the ocean blocked. Water in the lake was swiftly evaporating. Soon the ship was beached on the California desert, many miles from the sea. The crew grabbed what few supplies they could carry and abandoned ship, trudging westwards toward the water. As the story goes, the survivors were finally picked up. Other versions of the tale involve a pirate ship loaded down with almost a million doubloons. Another story states that the ship was from King Solomon's Navy, carrying the 10 lost tribes of Israel to North America. Another variation on this story claims that the Cahuilla Indians, knowing the Spanish were coming to take their riches and harm them, ambushed the Spanish party that came ashore. Then the tribe mounted a full attack on the galleon and after a fierce battle annihilated the entire crew. The Cahuillas began looting the ship of food and exotic items, but they could not move nor break into the heavy large iron chests in the hold. Then a storm brewed up, dousing the galleon. The Native Americans were forced to desert the ship, which broke from its anchor, drifted off into the storm, and sunk into the inland sea, taking its precious cargo with it. By the time the lake dried up years later, the ship had been long buried under tons of dirt, sand, and silt. How true could these stories be? Lake Cahuilla did exist in the 16th century and had a tribe of Native Americans living nearby. It is possible that a flood occurred connecting the Salton Sea to the Gulf of California. The area between the desert and the Gulf has the potential to be hit with massive flooding, as we know from Hurricane Kathleen in the 1970s, which sent a 10-foot-high wall of water across the desert floor. So yes, it is plausible a ship could have been carried in on the surge and stranded afterwards as water receded. The sheer number of stories told by both Native Americans and frontiersmen through the centuries suggests some truth to these lost ship tales. Expeditions in search of the lost treasure ship began in the 1800s, after travelers heard tales from Native Americans. Some claimed that the ship seen in the desert was haunted and could only be found at certain times of the year. In 1870, several Indians reported seeing the ship west of Dos Palmas. Later that year, the Los Angeles Star published a series of short stories about Charlie Klusker, who claimed to have located the ship and its broken masts. He was organizing expeditions to bring back the missing vessel, which he claimed was filled with crosses. It was reportedly 50 miles from Dos Palmas in a region of boiling mud springs. but there were no further updates, and Mr. Klusker appears to have simply disappeared, much like the elusive ship. In 1878, three German prospectors said they saw the ship around sundown, about 120 miles northwest of Yuma and 40 miles east of Indio. The sighting actually cost one of the prospectors their lives. The two survivors reported seeing an immense ship under full sail floating over the desert, sailing like a cloud into the sunset. The prospector who died went after it in the next morning, but never returned. A rescue party eventually found him dead from a lack of water, and strangely, he was completely nude. In 1905, a prospector named Butcher Knife Ike claimed to have discovered a fossil ship buried in the sand dunes of Borrego Springs. And in 1915, a Yuma Indian arrived in one town paying for his merchandise with pearls. When questioned, he claimed to have spent the night in a strangely shaped wooden house that was partially covered by sand. The people he spoke to offered him several hundreds of dollars for the night if he would take them back there in the morning, but he vanished overnight with their money. In 1933, Antonio de Fierro Blanco wrote a book discussing the story of Tiburcio Mancerna, a young mule driver who claimed he came across the lost Spanish galleon way back in 1775. Back then, Tiburcio was a mule driver for explorer Juan Bautista de Anza, who was searching for a land route from Sonora to Alta California. The young mule driver said he went into the hold of the ship and actually saw a treasure trove of pearls, but was never able to relocate the evasive ship. Many treasure hunters have gone after the missing treasure of pearls, but none have brought back evidence of finding it, perhaps because these are simply tall tales, or perhaps because the shifting sands of the desert at times reveal and at other times obscure the legendary lost ship. According to some storytellers, the ship itself, now bleached white and desiccated by the whipping sands, blown by the desert winds, has become a ghost. If you're out in the desert late some night, you may just see an eerie, otherworldly glow and hear the singing of those long-dead sailors, the skeleton of a ghost ship sailing into the sunset or adrift in the moonlight. Is the mysterious ship laden with the fortune and pearls still out there in the desert? Perhaps sailing spectrally over the sands? Perhaps one day, when the sands blow the right way, we'll be lucky enough to find out.
The East County Magazine radio show has won more than 100 journalism awards, with reporting that's making a positive difference in our region. The East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ covers important topics such as fire protection, energy and environmental issues, stories from East County's Native American and Chaldean communities, rural issues, and helping local veterans. Please help keep the East County Magazine show on KNSJ by donating or making a sustaining monthly pledge at www.knsj.org. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.